John, it's a good show because we get to talk to one of our favorites, a guy we talk to at the ballpark all the time, Keith Hernandez.
Absolutely. I mean, Keith is just as entertaining in person as he is on the air. I think they have the best announcing team in baseball, and I just love it when he comes on our show. And I am going to offer an apology for something I screwed up on, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, I love John Heyman mea culpas. I can't wait. We'll talk to him about the Mets. We'll talk to him about Whitey Herzog, who passed this morning. We'll talk to him about his broadcast career and how much longer it's going to go on. John and I will talk about a broadcast legend whose career is ending, John Sterling. We'll talk about some of the really interesting team starts, good and bad this year. And then we'll play Hit and Error at the end if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. John, we have somebody who was in both of our lives for a long time in New York. John Sterling announced that he is retiring effective immediately. John in his upper 80s. He's a legend. I'll say this is, John, because we've been good friends for a long time, what my dad meant to me. My dad and I used to listen to his radio show on WMCA together. He used to have a shtick called couplets. So like if a guy's last name, whatever it ended in. So if it was Bob Tucker, you had to call up and say Tucker Fredrickson, for example. Like, and I just brought up two old football players to show you from the time what it was. And my dad and I would play that game together, sitting in our living room, listening to a radio when he was on WMCA. And then my first year on the beat, I was on the beat from 89 to 95, the Yankee beat, is John's first year broadcasting. And then, we were on this ride together for the last 30 plus years, which included a Yankee dynasty. And I said this on the network this morning, John, and then I'll hand it over to you, is I said, John might not have been everyone's cup of tea, but there's never been a cup of tea like him before, and there'll never be a cup of tea like him
Yeah,
again.
that's fair. He's an original, no question about it. Very nice fellow too. And I mean, he was the soundtrack of the Yankees for the last generation. And I came on in 90 one year later, so I've been there with him almost since the beginning with the Yankees. I do remember the talk show. I called in one time when I was probably 10 years old. I was so excited when he answered my question and didn't hang up on me immediately. He's a very pleasant guy, which I mean, that may not have served as a talk show guy now, but as the Yankee announcer, it worked. And his home run calls will be remembered forever. I know some people got on him for, once in a while. I mean, he's in mid-80s now. Once in a while, thinking the ball was going out and it didn't quite go out. I mean, who cares? Once in a while, that might have happened in the later years. He was a fantastic play-by-play guy, and wish him all the best.
John, I think we both referenced this on social media yesterday. I think we also both appreciated he was a lover of newspapers and sports
Yes.
sections, and he was the rare broadcaster who on air wouldn't act like somebody else's thoughts were his thoughts. He'd say, "Hey, I read John Heyman in Newsday or the New York Post or Sports Illustrated," and say, "Oh, he made this great point," and he would give credit. He was gracious about opening up the broadcast booth to have people in. And I gotta say, I had a bucket list with him. So I want to say it was 2007. It was 07 or 08. Susan Waldman was celebrating the Jewish high holidays in September on consecutive weeks, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And they needed somebody to sit next to John and do the color for the games. And I did a game up in Toronto and I did a game at Yankee Stadium. And I gotta say, it was just a great thrill. It was something, like, oh, I wonder what that would feel like. And you know me again well, John. I came in with a bunch of papers. I'd done all this prep work on the Blue Jays and Yankees, some stories and stuff like that. And he took the paper and he threw it in the garbage before the game. And he said, "We're going to have a conversation for 3 hours. Don't overthink it." And that was very much him. He was loose, and that was the broadcast. If you were looking for exactitude, you might miss it with him. But it was very much like the guy sitting on a bar stool next to you talking about the baseball game he was at. And by the way, John, I pulled the stuff out of the garbage because I needed it. Nobody was coming to listen to me try to sound good on radio.
I'm not surprised you pulled it out of the garbage. I love the fact that he still carried the newspapers around, and I don't think he was on the internet. Maybe at the very end, I don't know, but He was not an internet guy, so he actually bought the paper, read the paper, and credited you or me whenever we had something that interested him. And very nice fellow. I'm sorry that the reviews didn't live up to his actual performance, which I think is by and large was excellent, even toward the end. So we will miss him, and we again wish him the best.
Yeah, Runyon-esque character, and there's fewer of them, and there was no one quite like him. John, if we're turning a page onto the 2024 season, we're at that moment, a couple of weeks in, just about 3 weeks now into the season. Too little to make broad statements, just enough to make some statements. Tell me, surprise teams. Who's catching your eye?
I mean, the whole Central is a shock to me. I mean, my predictions stink anyway, as you know. But I mean, who thought that all those teams in the Central were going to be good? And of course, you
NL
play
Central, right?
10% of the season, and well, maybe they won't be. But right now, the Guardians have been good. The Tigers have been good. I think some people might have seen that one coming. The Pirates have been good. The Royals, and the Royals, what did they lose? 110 games last year, something like 106 games. I'm not sure.
106, yeah, I think.
Obviously, they did some work in the offseason. They brought in a couple of veteran pitchers. Cole Ragans looks like an ace, so they're certainly better. I'm not going to bet on any of these teams to make it eventually, but because I stick with my predictions, but they've all shocked me to different degrees.
I think I picked the Reds and the Tigers to win those divisions.
Fair.
I'm not sure. John, I think that both divisions are going to be very sensitive there because I'm not sure anyone gets over 85 wins, but it's possible a bunch of teams jam into the low 80s, and who gets healthy and who fixes the team from the minor leagues and outside might have the best chance of winning a couple of divisions. Kansas City came to City Field and they lost a couple of games. I covered a couple of the games. But they were more impressive than they've been in the last few years. And I've got to say, if you said, what has stuck out to you in the first 3 weeks of the season? Bobby Witt hit a triple, Bobby Witt Jr. And it felt Ichiro-like how he moved around the bases. It was like he hit it, and the next thing he was sliding into third. The speed, the grace, the technical ability to cut the bases well, besides being attached to what seems like he's going to be a high-level superstar player, it really stuck out. John, can I go the other way with my surprise team? And it's obviously been a talking point early. I am surprised by the Astros. I just think that we're so used to them being good. They've been in seven straight League Championship Series 7 straight years. They've won 2 World Series. I know people will go and say, well, one of those World Series is tainted from 17. But I assume they haven't been stealing signs for the last 7 years, and they continue to be great. And they ch turned over the team, both in the clubhouse, pretty much front office, managers, and now Joe Espada has come in. You look at it, Ronald Blanco, who wasn't supposed to be in their rotation, he's got a 3-0 record with an under 1 ERA. Everyone else is 3-12. It's shocking. Now they should get Verlander back this week. Framba Valdez isn't considered too far behind. But I'll throw in one last one. The strength of this team, once they got Josh Hader, was supposed to be their last 3 innings, Abreu, Presley, and Hader. And combined, they have over a 10 ERA, those three guys, I think, or right around there. Hader pitched poorly again yesterday as we're speaking. I'm very surprised by them. I assume their pedigree will get them back in. It's only 3 weeks. But if you were asking positive surprise or negative surprise, what stood out to me these first few weeks, the Astros stood out to me.
Oh yeah, I would say they've got five guys now on the injured list from the rotation alone. That's a lot, right? Verlander, now Fromber's on there. We obviously McCullers has been injury prone. Urquidy's on there. I mean, I give them a pass because of the injuries. Now I was there for the first four games, and you're right, the back end of that pen, Abreu was hit hard, Presley was hit hard, Hader wasn't what you'd expect either. So that's surprising, no question about that. I do think they'll come around. I could be wrong. Again, my predictions aren't great, but I do think that they will come around once they are not quite as injured. Once Verlander is going to come back, and a lot of these guys are going to start to come back. Bobby Witt, I mean, he's one of those speed power combinations that you see come along once every 25 years, I think. And, you know, I have Mickey Mantle, Mike Trout, and he this guy plays shortstop too. So he's one of the best players in the game right now. And, you know, I was impressed by them. I think the kid Lofton looks pretty good at second. They got some young players. You know, the signings look pretty good at this point as well. Reagan's was a good trade. So they're certainly better. But I mean, the thing that stands out is that Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, obviously you can't regret getting the switch hitting catcher Adley Rutschman with number one. But I wonder what that draft debate was like. It was much easier for the Royals when just Witt was left for them. And you knew that they would take him. Now, that draft is looking pretty good, right? Corbin Carroll was in that draft. Volpe was in that. A lot of very good players were in that draft. But Bobby Witt Jr. was a guy I saw in a home run contest hitting the ball 450 feet plus. And that was with an aluminum bat. But I saw him up here. I'm in Florida, up in Jupiter. Perfect game, man. A nice young man. His dad, we both know, very pleasant guy. He was a pretty good pitcher at the major league level and an outstanding athlete. So, obviously, the genes work there, and, you know, he might end up being the best player in baseball before it's all done. But right now, he's one of the best.
You know, you mentioned Volpe there. Why don't we close the segment? You know, the Mets in our backyard are kind of where we thought they might finish the year, right around 500, give or take one way or the other. That's where they are, playing much better than obviously they were when they opened the season 0-5. Yankees have, I think, still the best record in the major leagues. I think they've just lost two games in a row for the first time all season. You surprised by them?
A little bit. I didn't have them in the playoffs, so I can't claim that I knew that this was coming. Volpe, I figured, would improve, but he looks really good. He looks like a legit all-star. Obviously, Soto's been good. It seems like he's rubbing off on the other guys. Cabrera has been much better than I would have thought. A lot of the guys who had bad years last year, I think they really dedicated themselves, and I give them credit. Stanton looks better. Rodon looks much better. You know, obviously, Volpe, we just talked about, looks incredible. So, I mean, they look like an outstanding team. You know, I probably shouldn't be surprised by their record, but I can't claim that I knew it was coming.
Yeah, you know, Volpe really does stand out for me. I thought there'd be a sophomore bump. But late last season, our colleague, Greg Joyce, wrote a story with this comparison. We had talked about it late because I kind of felt something similar, which was there are some Venn diagram stuff between Bobby Witt and Volpe. You mentioned the same draft. They were on the same 18 and under team that won a tournament in Panama. Volpe was actually the number three hitter. Corbin Carroll, you mentioned, was on that team. Pete Crow Armstrong, Riley Green, CJ Abrams. It was a great 18 and under U.S. team that won. And Witt had kind of like the first year, a little bit like Volpe. There was some steal homer numbers that were good, but there were a lot of rough edges. And then in year two, he smoothed out a lot of those rough edges, became a star, got a $288 million contract with the Royals. And it feels to me a little bit like Volpe has fixed a lot of the holes he had, especially as a hitter. And the Yankees moved him to number one in the order 5 games ago. And I just wonder, at least for the rest of this year, and if they sign Soto, for how long are we looking at Volpe, Soto, Judge as the top three? Because if I'm going to pick out everything that's really impressed me about Volpe since they moved them there, it's 5 games. He has 5 walks and 1 strikeout in that time. No pitcher in the world wants, as much as Anthony Volpe's hitting, you do not want to walk a hitter in front of Soto and Judge. And the fact that his discipline has been so good, you know, that he's still drawing walks in that situation, which gets him to use his speed, forces fastballs a little more often to Judge and Soto, really has stood out to me. It's only, again, within the short sample size, that's even a smaller sample size, but something that has really stood out to me.
Yeah, I mean, his baseball instincts stand out too. I mean, he's stealing bases basically at will. Obviously, it's a little bit easier now with the rules having changed, coincidentally, when he came up, but he's taking advantage of it. I mean, there are veteran guys who still aren't good at stealing bases, and he's good right now at it. I mean, he lives, breathes, eats baseball. He's just a baseball guy. I mean, the teammates tease him. I never had a drink. Now, he told me that he once sipped a champagne at a celebration or something like that. But basically, the guy's just a ball player. you know, he's never going to be in trouble. And it was just a great pick away. It was around 30, right? So
30th,
they've had some good ones between him and Judge around 30. That's pretty good because I do believe he is an all-star level player. I don't want to put him in the Witt category yet, but this is his second year. We'll wait and see what happens in the third year. You never know. But, you know, Witt's a little bit faster and a little bit more power than anybody.
Yeah, no, Witt is going to be a better player than him. I was talking about the trajectory as opposed
right,
to
the trends are there, right?
You know, just because they had they played together, same draft. I just saw some similarity there. Look, we gave some insight into our thoughts on the Yankees. I'm sure we'll dive deep into the Mets. We'll talk a little Whitey Herzog, who passed away today, with our guest Keith Hernandez. If you stick with us on the show. John and I are so happy to be joined by someone we enjoy seeing at the ballpark all the time. It's Keith Hernandez, great career, great Mets announcer, now a friend of the podcast, second time you've joined us. And Keith, we planned to have you on. It's just coincidence. Whitey Herzog passed away this morning, Hall of Fame manager at 92. You obviously have a lot of history with Whitey Herzog as both a player for and a player against. You won a championship with him, I believe, in 82. You won a championship in 86, in part by being able to hold them off in the NL East, or hold them off. You won big that year, but by outdoing a team that you hadn't been able to outdo in the past. I wonder if I could just do the most simple thing. Whitey Herzog thoughts.
Well, number one, like you said, 92 years of age, and he was still sharp as a tack, and I had been in his company, and he loved to talk baseball and hadn't lost anything of his mental faculties. He was sharp. Great manager, obviously. You weren't going to outmanage him on the field. Great baseball man, Hall of Famer, deservedly so. And basically the architect of that running team that we had in the 80s before started when I was there with the 82 championship. When he came over in 80, when Ken Boyer was fired, and he really took the reins, it was general manager and manager in 81. And I can tell you that you knew you had someone in charge that first spring training with him, the first full season in 81. And really, that was the split season. And we had had the best record overall in the season and finished in second in both first and second half. And we went home. We didn't go to the playoff. Whitey was furious about that. And you can make an argument either way. But he was the architect of that. He was also a very intimidating manager. You think in terms of an intimidating team, you think in terms of the 27 Yankees, you know, the lumber company, the Pirates, big old sluggers. But the Cardinals were a different bunch. They were speed, good pitching, great defense, put the pressure on you with their speed. And it was a whole different type of intimidation. And he was part of that. He put that team together. And I must say that I learned a lot from him. We were ready. He made a lot of changes that first year. He'd made the big trade, traded Simmons, Vukovich, and Raleigh Fingers. It wasn't a great trade for us, for the Cardinals. Made the Brewers a world championship, really, because Vukovich won the Cy Young that year. And Fingers was a big part, but got hurt. He wasn't available in the World Series. It might have been a different finish if Fingers had been in that World Series to save games. But anyway, he was the guy that brought it together. And we just knew that you had someone at the reins. He taught us the little things, how to win a game. He was a stickler on getting a runner over from third with less than two outs. Just emphasize the fundamentals. And the Cardinals were that Cardinal team of the 80s. They were fundamentally sound. And he formed that team around speed, the big ballpark, AstroTurf. It was to our advantage. And they had a great run. I mean, we didn't catch them in 85 and 87. You know, we had to blow them away in 86, and then we won in 88, and they were on the downspin then, and then we were also after that on the downspin. So But anyway, it was a great decade competing against them. I think it was really two exciting teams and great baseball. You were there. You saw it. It was electric.
Well, speaking of bad trades, the trade of you to the Mets was really a bad trade for the Cardinals, but I won't follow up with that now. Thank you so much for joining us, Keith. We just had Doc Day. You had your day, your number retired. What were those first 2 years with Doc, especially that second year? I don't know if we're ever going to see anything like that again.
Well, the first year was pretty exciting. I remember the first start in Houston, and of all places to start, the Astrodome was a dome, and it really, you know, even as a veteran, I never felt really comfortable in that dome for him to make his first start with his parents there. We saw him in spring training. Davey convinced Frank Cashin to bring him up. Frank didn't want to bring him up, and Davey insisted and convinced Frank, and he was ready, obviously. And I just was very worried that first start how he would respond. And he just pitched five innings of beautiful ball, and he was on his way. You know, you look at that first year, he was like 500 in like towards the end of July, and he had a run the last 2 months of the season, I believe, where he won like eight something, nine in a row, something like that, where he was just dominating and, of course, broke the rookie strikeout record, which was horribly exciting. But the next year was just, you know, it was like a Bob Gibson year, Warren Spahn year, Sandy Koufax year, and to be able to play behind him and experience that was really a treat.
You know, Keith, every time that group gets together for an event, and it happens quite often because it was probably that in 69 are the highlights of a six plus decades of the Mets, I always just wonder, and I don't know what the question is really, I always just wonder, like, what would it have been like if that team had to deal with cell cameras and social media? You know, it was like you were so big on and off the field. I'm like wondering, what does Doc Gooden's 1985 look like on social media? I'm wondering what everything that happened afterwards to Doc looks like on social media and all you. I don't even know what the question is. I just wonder, can that kind of team even exist anymore?
No, definitely not. And we're from a different generation. I wouldn't have personally wanted to have a Twitter handle. But the organizations want them to have one. Yeah. I remember Josh Tolley came up with great fanfare, and the poor guy had such – I've never saw a hitter swing and miss so much that 1 year where I felt so bad for him. And he was getting killed on Twitter. He had to get off. He had to shut it down. And I just – you know, things are different. I tweeted a little bit, and when I did my book and with Haji, and you know, start doing it every day. I mean, I haven't got time for that. And, you know, who knows? I'm sure there's people in the front office doing it for them. I, number one, would not trust anybody with my Twitter handle. But you know, it's tough enough to play the game, but it's a different world today. People like to interact that way, and you know, we didn't have cell phones. If we had to dial out, we had to call the operator from the clubhouse. Hi, this is Keith Hernandez. I'm calling my brother in California, collect. And his name is Gary Hernandez, and this is the number. And then they would log all the calls. And that's how we were able to call. If I had to call your wife, you know, everything was logged. Now they're all on their phones, and it's just a different world.
You know, I loved your tweets, especially the ones about Haji. I know, I hope you've got the Twitter fixed, because I know somebody took over
it's
for
fixed.
It and it's fixed. Somebody was pretending to be selling computers on your,
yes. Yes.
On your Twitter.
I want
to ask you again about that 86 era, I guess. You won the championship. That's for you the second championship that you won. I think it's hard to win a championship. I mean, there are, you know, 30 teams, close to 30 teams then. So, I mean, I think it's great that you won. Some people think you should have won more. You won 108 games that year. Do you look back on that era and say, you know, if we, you know, if some of the guys were a little calmer or something, maybe we would have won more than one champion? Or do you look at it like, hey, it's great that we won. I've got two rings. And everything's great.
Well, I think if our group had been nice guys and gone home and picked up a book and read a book after a ball game. I don't think we would have won 108 games. So, you know, 85, we win 98 games and go home. The Cardinals win 102. I mean, that was a very disappointing year. 87 to me is the one year that sticks in my craw because A, we had injuries to all of our starters. We wound up losing the last week of the season to the Cardinals. We didn't leave camp with Roger McDowell. All of a sudden had an emergency appendectomy. Doc had to go in the tank, and we didn't have him for a while. We didn't have Roger for a month. We lost Ojeda. We lost Sid. Down the stretch, in that one important series in September when the Cardinals came to town and they had lost like around 10 of 13, something ridiculous. And I couldn't believe that they were in this kind of that good a team. How in the hell are they losing ball games? And I remember going out in that series, and I went out early on purpose. Actually, we were out home. But I stayed out on the field and watched their body language, and they were down. And I remember going back in the clubhouse and saying, guys, let's just put the hammer. They're ready. They're ready. We take these guys now. They're done. We won the first game. The second game was the critical game. We had a 4-1 lead in the seventh, and Vince Coleman bunts down the third baseline and Ronnie was our best pitcher in the stretch, and he goes to pick it up barehanded and he tears a ligament in his thumb. We wound up losing that game in extra innings, I believe. And then we won the rubber match. And then they went to Philadelphia and won 19 out of the next 22, something like that. Ridiculous. They deserved to win it. But we had lost all of our pitchers that year at one point. And I just feel that was 15 games. We'd have run away with it. And that's the one season that sticks in my craw. And then it would have been 3 years in a row that we had got into postseason. And it would have been a whole different ball of wax. I didn't feel good about 88. We were starting internally to pull apart. We'd beaten the Dodgers, 11 out of 12. It was kind of a bad omen. And I just had a bad feeling going into that series. And, you know, there's so many things that series turned around on, which was a great series. I mean, Socha hits a home run and Gibson hits a home run in extra innings. And that night game that went to the wee hours of the morning, it's just that's the breaks. But 87 is the one year that really kills me.
It's amazing how fresh it still is when you talk about it. It's a long time ago, and you're giving incredible detail about it. Also, the wild card came too late for you, right? If you're a wild card, you probably make the playoffs 4 or 5 times in a row.
No, we'd have made it all. We would have made it 84. We would not have made it in 89. Right. Padres would have beaten us out. But if there was a wild card, we might have had more incentive to get player. There. Yeah. And so we would have been there every year, 84 through 88. We would have been there, and no one would have wanted to play us.
Yeah.
No one. It would have wound up coming down to the Cardinals and us. And wouldn't that have been great?
Yeah. Wild card came too late. On the subject of wild card, tortured segue here, Keith. The Mets of 2024, who you see play quite a lot, they're trying to live in two worlds this year. They're trying to get into the playoffs, probably as a wild card if you think Atlanta is as dominant a team as they've been in recent years, while trying to clean some stuff up for the future, roster, payroll, see young players. You're watching it unfold in front of you. Can they live in both of these worlds and do both of these things?
Well, it's I just remember we still have an old pitching staff. We have a veteran pitching staff. And so it's not like there's a big movement for youth. We made the trades last year to get these young players that are in the minor leagues and, you know, more than a few. And hopefully the future will pan out. But you never know in baseball. There's never a guarantee in baseball with young talent. You just don't know. There's no guarantees. They're playing good right now. They're pitching well. Their pitching's always the name of the game. I mean, it's just period. I mean, look at the 69 Mets. Look at that lineup that they had. I mean, before they got Clendenin, Clendenin came in, but you know they had the pitching, and you're going to have to beat Seaver and Kuzman and Gentry, and that's what it boils down to. And if Mets pitching can hold up, which has pitched well right now. And Budo's been a big shot in the arm. I thought he should have made the club. I know he has options and all those numbers game, but he pitched well enough in spring training to make the club. And I think with the injuries, I think the way he pitched his last time out, he's going to be put in that rotation. He's got to stay. Can they do it? I think they're going to hit. They get JD back, Martinez, if healthy. It's going to be another bat. And I was happy with the lineup without him going into spring training before the Mets signed him. So he's just another veteran bat that's going to be a proven bat that's going to help. So I'm not worried about the offense. The pitching has got to hold up. And that's for everybody. The Braves right now are in big trouble with Strider down. How are they going to fill those spots? They have pitching woes. Phillies are always tough. They're a hard-nosed group. They're a throwback team. They play hard. They're tough to beat, and they come after you. They're old school kind of play. I like them, and they've got the three good pitchers. I love Suarez, their left hand. And everybody talks about Nola, and the Wheeler. Other guy Wheeler. Too bad we traded him. but I love Suarez, and that's why they've beaten the Braves the last 2 years, because you go down into this comes down to pitching.
Pete Alonso, you're the greatest fielding first baseman ever. Does he ever ask you for pointers? Do you ever offer pointers? Where do you think he stands defensively? And I mean, the fans are clamoring for Steve Cohen to keep him. But you know, there is an idea out there that maybe the new front office might prefer to go for the younger guys. They certainly did make the big play for Yamamoto. Soto will be out there as well. Where do you stand on everything concerning Pete?
I've never really had any conversation about defense with him. Talked hitting more a few times. Pete's got a body of work. You know, he's the most prolific home run hitter in the game. Okay. When I first saw him, he reminded me of Harmon Killebrew. I said that this first year when he hit the 50 plus home runs. I said, he's a modern day Harmon Killebrew, and I really still feel that way. So his defense is much improved. He's a force up there. He's got 6 home runs already. I mean, and we're not even a month into the season. He's proven. What's he going to command next year? You're going to pay him $500-600 million? You know, you just don't know. If you're a GM, they're probably entertaining. I mean, it doesn't hurt to ask, hey, here's Pete. What do you got to offer? You know, just to throw it out there and, hey, we like this guy, this guy, this guy in your organization. We're going to get a basket full of prospects. So it's a big decision that they're going to have to make. And Pete's going to have his normal year. Okay. He's swinging the bat good. They got off to a bad start. I don't see anything wrong with his swing. He's so dangerous up there. You make a mistake and he's going to put a hurt on you. And he hasn't really gotten into the rhythm of the season yet. I mean, I'm anticipating if he stays healthy, he's going to have another 40 plus home run. 40 home runs. That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I think he's going to put the same kind of pressure on the Mets that Judge put on the Yankees in his walk year. He might not get to 62, but he's going to get to a big number. He's going to be the homegrown beloved slugger. It's going to be a tough one to walk away from.
You know, and one other thing, Joe, I just want to interrupt you. He really cares. He plays hard. He wants to be the best he can be. He's got a good attitude in that way. You know, you don't have to worry about him. When he gets the money, he might become a fat cat. I don't see that happening.
Yeah. You know, Keith, the big story in the sport this year to begin with is all these arm injuries with pitchers. And I know that if we were sitting in the broadcast booth, I might turn to Darling for some thoughts on it. But there's few people more thoughtful about baseball than you. And I just wonder, you mentioned Strider earlier. You know, if you're a baseball fan, this is terrible. You want to see the best players healthy and playing. And, you know, him, Yuri Perez, Lucas Giolito. I mean, we've seen a lot of good pitching go down so far this season. What does somebody who loves the game, cares about the game, thinks about the game a lot, think about what's going on here?
Well, I know who I Paulo is my former, my good friend and former teammate, and you know Jim Cott, who's been very vocal on Twitter or X. He posts, and Ronnie is basically of the same in the same camp. You just can't be throwing those razor blade sliders. You know, 96. Okay, granted, the gun is different today, and I think the gun is the gun in our day was slower by around 4 miles per hour, but it's all relative. 91 miles per hour on our gun was plenty, and 91 miles an hour on this gun today is plenty to get people out. But these, like Harvey, just those hard sliders, DeGrom, that is such stress on the elbow, and it's just not going to hold up. I know now we got the DH. There's not a pitcher in the order, so you got another hitter. But I've talked to pitchers of the past, and they just said, you know, you get to that bottom third of the order, that's kind of, you can take a deep breath, and you don't have to be overpowering. Just be strategic with your pitches and locate. But everything today is spin rate and velocity. And, okay, sure, I faced a lot of pitchers. I hated pitchers that came up and had great arms, but they didn't have any command, but they had a great breaking ball and they threw hard. And, but they, you know, they might call outside and he might come up and in and you can't see where they didn't have an idea of where they were pitched. I liked the pitchers that knew how to pitch and I knew they were, what they were doing. I liked that, but they can throw, they can, you can go up against those kind of pitchers and they can make you look like a horse's ass in three pitches and go sit down. And then you can go up there and they can fall behind. And when men are on base and you can clean their clock because they got to come into you sooner or later, or they're going to walk the ballpark, which we're seeing a lot of that lately. A lot of 3-2, not challenging, 3-1, not challenging in situations where you can't afford a walk. And it's asking a lot of young pitchers that have good arms, but don't have command. It's just a lot to ask when it's late in the game and you're in a tight situation with the game in the balance and you're asking a kid with an arm that doesn't have command to throw a 3-2 changeup, 3-2 breaking ball, 3-1. I mean, it's asking too much. And it's a stress on the arm. So I talked with Ted Simmons once, and he said they're looking for that 30% swing and miss rate. That comes with a guy that doesn't know where it's going, that's got a good hard slider, big spin rate, throwing at 95 miles an hour. It starts out, you haven't got much time to think, and it breaks in the dirt, and you can't hold up. That's a tough one, but can they do it when the crunch time, you know? So that's what I think is happening. That's my feeling, and I don't know anything about pitching. I just listened around to Jim Cott, Ronnie, and a couple other people when I read the articles. So it's... I love to watch pitchers that know how to pitch. That to me, it's an art. You watch Warren Spahn pitch in his day. Warren Spahn wasn't, he had a screwball. He wasn't a hard thrower. And he's the winningest left-hander of all time. It's just fun to watch guys that know what they're doing. And it's, you can just see them set up hitters. And it's fun.
Hey, last one for me. This is going to be my first podcast apology ever. I did not vote for you for the Hall of Fame. Screwed up. You should be in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to say we didn't have all our information then or something. I don't know. I'll make an excuse, but I think I screwed up. I mean, you have the most gold gloves at first base. All the guys with the most gold gloves around the infield are in, and your OPS plus is higher than all of them, even Brooks Robinson. So, What do you think about the voting? Is this something that means a lot to you? Would you like the Veterans Committee to correct what we screwed up?
Well, of course, I'd love to be in the Hall of Fame. It would be the cherry on top of the chocolate sundae. All that whipped cream and all it needs is that little red cherry on top. That would be beautiful. I mean, that's what every kid wants. You know, it would be the ultimate for me. It would cap off my career. I think what hurts me is the home runs that I played in Busch Stadium, and you just could not, you know, you had to hit line drives there, especially in the summer when it got hot and humid, you know, and Busch Stadium, Shea Stadium was a fair ballpark. you know, you had to hit the ball there. And I was a line drive hitter and doubles hitter. And I had the fortune, good fortune of having, you know, and with the Mets, I had all the power guys behind me. I had Darryl Carter and McReynolds. So I was the ideal third place hitter. And, you know, drive in the runs and also be a table setter for the big guys behind me. I think if I would have tried to hit more home runs, and I could have, I think I focused so much on the top half of the ball and hitting line drives to a fault, because there were some laying right up here hangers that I could have just altered my swing that much, and I could have hit it out. But I was just drilled as a kid by my father. If I ever got under the ball, it was just like, you're under the ball, hit line drives, top half of the ball. And it was like in my brain, and I wish I could have gone in there and unlocked it and said, you know, go for it once in a while, you know. But then again, I don't think I would have been a 300 hitter. And I wouldn't have been the clutch hitter that I was. I was a clutch hitter because I stayed disciplined in line drives. And so it's, you know, give and take. If it gets there, great. I don't know. I don't know how it works. I'm up in 25, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. It'll be great.
You know, Keith, I think I said before, you came too late to make the playoffs as much as the Mets would have with the wild card. I think if you have your exact same career, and it's like 1995 to 2015, you make the Hall of Fame. It's looked at in a different way. Like, there's no doubt to me, you had a better career than Joe Mauer. And Joe Mauer just waltzed into the Hall of Fame. And I just think people look at the numbers different, sum up a player's career in a different way. And I think you became a victim of time as opposed to anything else. But that's my two cents on it. As my way of wrapping up, across town, we had a broadcaster announce his retirement in John Sterling. You're not in John Sterling's age category, but like John, you're an iconic. You went from an iconic baseball player to an iconic broadcaster. You're part of a iconic trio. Sorry for overusing the word in the booth. How long do you want to do this, Keith? You're obviously superb at it, like you were as a player. Does it still get you to the ballpark every day? How long do you want to continue to be in a baseball booth?
Well, I think with the new ownership, I want to. I'm very inquisitive about how things are going to turn out with the Mets. And it's a new era, and it's going to make me hang around a little bit longer. I'm doing 110 games. If I lived in the city, it would be a piece of cake. But I got 86 mile drive, and that's a little rugged. But I don't mind it. I'm not complaining. I love what I do. I love the game. My contract runs out next year, and I'll be going on 17 my and you know, maybe I'll cut back, I don't know, 100 games, maybe 90 games, just to get a little more time off. But I do still love to travel the season. I always love playing on the road, and I always like, as an announcer, going on the road to the different ballparks and seeing the different fans. And the season goes by faster when you're 3 days in and 3 days out. So I don't see in the near future, as long as I have my mental faculties of packing it in, not for a while.
Yeah. Good. You might not hit line drives like you used to, Keith, but your mental faculties are as good as ever. Just so you know that. Okay. I wouldn't want to go wisdom for wisdom with you. So it's... you're still on the top of your game. And we know it's that time of year. Everyone's busy, as you mentioned, 110 games. John and I do appreciate you joining us on the show.
It's a pleasure. I'll see you all at the ballpark. The Mets are playing well. We'll see if they can keep it up.
Yep.
Driving the 86 now? Are you driving today?
Oh, every day. Yeah. I tried to negotiate one every 10-game homestand. Just let me have one car service one day. Just one day.
You don't have a driver?
That's someone driving, and they wouldn't do it.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't they know who you are?
Injustice.
John and I just put you in the Hall of Fame, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, that's a bigger injustice than the Hall of Fame, to give you a driver.
Anyway.
Thanks so much, Keith.
I'll see you at the park.
John and I, of course, thank Keith Hernandez for joining us on the show. John, hit or error?
I'm going to give a hit. I've been very soft lately. I got to look around for some more errors. But Mike Trout is back
That's
on
gonna
his
be my
game.
hit.
And well, you let me go first, so I appreciate that. And I always take the most obvious. What else to take? I mean, he's an all-time great, and he's back playing like an all-time great. Obviously, he had some injury seasons. I mean, I was there. You were in spring training too. I know you went early, but I did get to see the Angels. I mean, he struck out at not quite half as at bats, but close. And I think there was some concern, not by him, but maybe by others. And he is back on his game, one of the best hitters and one of the best players in the game. So that's great to see.
So I'll just second it. I was going to do Trout, seven homers early, but and I know that the Angels, as we're speaking, they're either like 500 or one over. But if you look, a lot of the offense has been him and Ward. The pitching still isn't deep and good. I suspect that this is a team that's not even good enough to be one of the three wild cards. So, John, instead for my hit or error, why don't I put it back to you? Do you think there'll ever be a moment where Trout will go to Artie Moreno, the owner, and say, you know what? I still have good baseball in me, as he's showing this year. I'd rather it not be another year that ends without it. He has said that that's the easy way out and that he doesn't want to take the easy way out. But man, it's going to be a career we look back on with some sadness because we didn't get to see this historically great player play the biggest games.
Yeah, we may look at it with some sadness, but I don't feel like he's sad, so I don't think so. I think he wants to be an Angel. I lived out there. It's a pretty good life, particularly if you're making $36 million a year. I think he's probably enjoying it quite a bit in Newport or wherever he lives. And I don't think he wants to go. I mean, I talk to him every spring training. I'm in occasional touch with him, and he does not seem disgruntled. He seems gruntled, if that's a word. I don't think so. He seems happy. He seems like a happy guy. I will say this. I will add this. If they wanted to trade him, now they could do it because he's back on his game. I wasn't so sure when all that discussion over the last couple of years, they should trade him, he should go, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he's making $36 million and he was hurt a lot. So I don't know that he had that value. Now they could actually do it, but he's not gonna. I don't believe it. I'm not that close to him that I could say I know for sure, but my guess is no, he's not gonna go anywhere.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, my guess would be no, that he's kind of determined to play it out there. Maybe it says something about me that I'm maybe sadder than Mike Trout about what Mike
Yeah,
Trout's
don't worry so
de
much.
destiny is. Somebody who did win two championships, Keith Hernandez, we want to thank our producers. John, who are our producers?
And Jake Brown and Dan Shalom.
Oh,
I
beautiful.
hope I got that right. I know I got Jake
Dan.
Brown right. That
Yes,
much I know.
Jake and Dan, thanks so much for helping us navigate the show as always. Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, drop a review, go to the New York Post Sports YouTube page. You get to see how handsome John ha looks with his great background in Miami if you do that. And we hope you continue all season to stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.